my car, and I love my catfish.
Better not be as much as you love me.
Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 1-855-573-8227, and donate your unwanted car, truck, RV, or motorcycle to KPFT. We'll pick it up. Your tax-deductible donation entitles you to KPFT membership, hair, luster, and teeth. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR, 1-855-573-8227. Details at kpft.org.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Welcome to Technology Bites, everybody. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Man, this is weird. This is so weird. We are missing most of our geeks.
No, not most.
Well, yeah, you're right. Not most. We're missing a good portion. We're missing...
A third.
We're missing the brain trust.
We're missing the youth.
Hey.
You're on the old end of the seesaw is way unbalanced compared to the
In my day, Technology Bites didn't have no young people on the show.
We have 3/4 of the people who were on this show in 1995. At least on some episodes.
Yeah, so Barrett and Flicted are our men on the ground at DEF CON right now. They're in Vegas. I know that the last I heard from Barrett is he had secured his press pass. The last I heard from Flicted is he had secured his pat down.
Yeah.
At the airport. I told him, you know.
And he enjoyed that quite a bit, sounds like.
Oh, he was mad because the first year he went to DEF CON with us, I didn't care about the pat down, so the scan. So I just went through. I didn't choose to opt out, and they both got opted out automatically. So they didn't even get the opportunity to say they wanted to opt out. They were just opted out. So they're in Vegas right now, causing trouble.
Hacking.
Hacking or getting hacked.
Or getting hacked,
yes,
exactly.
Yes, getting hacked, yes.
That's more likely.
Not those guys.
No, you know, a little bit of common sense goes a long way at DEF CON, I think. You know,
and they're both experienced victims, so.
Have fun hacking the castle.
those free... Man, my Wi-Fi is not picking up any Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I'm still, even though we've got a connection here and a hotspot, it's like the internet is not
cooperating with us
at all. Fix it. So when you call, we're just going to be guessing at stuff, okay?
Well, we actually know the answers to some things.
We've been hacked. We've been hacked remotely from Vegas.
Apparently, all of our internet belong to DEF CON.
They took the internet to Vegas, and
they took
just
it with them.
There.
That's right. That's what happens when you get patted down.
Well, at any rate, we are missing two of our geeks, but it's okay. Groovehouse will be manning the board and womaning the phone.
I'm sorry?
What?
Why would I be womaning the phone?
What are you going to be doing? Who's going to answer the phone?
I'll man the phone as well.
I was giving you the whole yin-yang. You're manning the microphone and the board, no?
No.
Get in touch with your female side.
You'll be androgenizing the microphone?
Don't you want to, like, drive a new car and tweet about it?
I know she'll.
Cut. All right, so the vital information you need to know about this show. If you have internet, we don't have internet, but if you have internet, you can visit us online at geekradio.com. That is the website of choice for learning about the show. We have an IRC channel going, irc.cuckoo.com, and the channel Tech Bytes. If you want to hang out there, we'll probably be in there at some point when we get some internet. But you can hang out there in the IRC if you like. It's the show within a show. You can also call us at 713-526-5738 if you want to get queued up and talk to a man on the phone after you get screened.
Talk to a man about a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, if you want to be on the air, we're going to have about an hour and a half of call-in portion of the show. And poor Pete, your news is online, isn't it?
I've got enough pages of it came up that I'm okay.
But you're okay.
I guess maybe I'm just taking all of.
I was wondering if my Wi-Fi on this new MacBook Air is misbehaving because I'm showing no access points. It's just not.
Have fun. You've restarted it?
I've restarted the computer. I've restarted the Wi-Fi, and I'll try it again.
Because it took mine a while to find.
It's almost as if somebody's jamming me.
We're jamming.
Jamming.
Yeah.
Hope you like technology bites. All right, so we will take your calls after a little bit, but first, we're going to go to San Antonio.
No.
Wait, we're not going to go to San Antonio.
Pete's
live in the studio. Can we go out to San Antonio and bounce back?
Or not without the internet.
Can we go to Vegas and get the intro, or do you have it?
So much has gone right with you being in the studio, because with Flicted God, we don't have the equipment to patch you in for Skype. Without the internet, if we had the equipment, we still couldn't patch you in. So the fact that you just showed up here tonight is a good thing. Ah, looks like I just got some internet.
How's it feel?
It feels all right. I still only see the one connection, which is the... Oh, there it is. You say yours isn't working so good?
No, it's not working
very good. I'm not going to connect to that. All right. I'll stay connected to this. All right. So we'll turn a blind eye to San Antonio, and we'll go to the seat right next to me for the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Take it away, InfoShot.
It's the Technology Bytes InfoShot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Nice.
Yeah.
Move that microphone. Well, in the ping pong of what's legal with a warrant or not, I think we're at pong, or maybe we're at ping. A federal appeals court has ruled that search warrants are not required by law enforcement agencies if they wish to seize cell phone records. Isn't that nice? Because that, you know, that's just public information, right? The ruling from the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals claims that collection of such data doesn't violate the Fourth Amendment and doesn't need to pass the probable cause test. The decision overturns another ruling from 2011 in which a Texas judge argued that the seizure of cell phone records without a search warrant did violate the Fourth Amendment. The new ruling rests on the fact that the court considers the data, numbers dialed, date and time of communication, you know, what we now all know as metadata, they consider that as business records of the service provider. They don't have anything to do with you. As a result, with, quote, reasonable grounds, unquote, argues the court, the info is fair game to the authorities. This isn't the end of it. I'm sure it'll ping and pong back and forth some more. Maine and Montana have both passed legislation this year stating that search warrants must be used to access any location information from phone details, and a Jersey Supreme Court also ruled the same. You can read the full ruling from the case online if you really are into reading all that kind of stuff. In other kind of law news, we'll just cram all those up to the front. There was a proposed change to U.S. law that would allow state attorneys general to hold websites liable for content posted by users. And according to a tech trade group and legal scholars said that is a, quote, dangerous path. The proposal by a group of state attorneys general to modify the so-called safe harbor provision in Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, quote, would jeopardize the continued growth of the entire internet industry and the free expression rights of internet users everywhere, the group said in a letter to top U.S. lawmakers. You know, basically right now the law is that you're not responsible. If you have a website, like say Geek Radio, a website like say geekradio.com, if it allows comments, if somebody goes on there and makes inflammatory comments, we aren't responsible for those. So somebody
right.
can come to – if somebody said, hey, let's all hold a big giant riot on the discussion board, we wouldn't be responsible because we're just providing the –
Well, legally we're not – we can't be held responsible for that.
For someone else's postings.
But that's,
this
that's
group be- wants to – these state attorneys general want to change that so that we could be – so that we would be responsible for it. And it kind of does not make any legal sense.
You are not responsible for it so long as you don't know about it. But if somebody brings
they
it
want
to
get
attention.
Rid of the safe harbor at all, though.
Right.
So it's like
that might be
federal
like
prosecutors. Section 230 of the law broadly protects internet publishers and service providers from responsibility for user-generated content on their sites. But in June, state attorneys general proposed a change to the law that would allow prosecution of publishers in cases where user-posted content violates state law. So say you live in some backward part of the country and they don't think that if they outlaw Grumpy Cat pictures and somebody posts a Grumpy Cat picture on your site, then the state attorney general wants to be able to come after you. I think that is a recipe for disaster. Federal prosecutors now can hold web publishers liable in cases involving federal criminal law, intellectual property law, and electronic communications privacy law, and the state attorneys general want the same authority. But those signing Wednesday's letter, including the Center for Democracy and Technology, NetChoice, Public Knowledge, and the Internet Association, said the proposed change is a bad idea. 23 trade groups and other organizations signed the letter along with 19 legal scholars. The Attorney General's proposal would replace the certainty that Section 230 provides with open-ended legal risk, the letter said. By hosting third-party content, online service providers would expose themselves to potential prosecution under literally thousands of criminal statutes on a state-by-state basis. Imagine Google. Anything where you can contribute content, having to deal with all those jurisdictions and any laws in those different states would be a big burden for startups and smaller companies. Plus, I think that the kind of common sense test is unless you want to have to screen every single thing that's posted to any kind of user, you know, think about Instagram or Tumblr or any of those, they almost couldn't function if the provider of the service is liable for whatever the idiots on the service do. So we'll keep an eye on that one. It's kind of bizarre. I hope that I would think that one might not stand up, because I think that we haven't even heard from the really big guns on this one yet. Here's a good one for people who don't listen to Technology Bites. Apparently, a survey reveals that more than a third of Americans assault their computers in one way or another because the machines frustrate them.
Assault?
Yeah, there was a survey that sought to discover just how many Americans abuse their computers. Personal methods of abuse were also analyzed. 36% of people admitted, quote, using profanity, screaming and shouting, or striking their computer with a fist or other object in the last 6 months. Yes, only 36%. Let's see. The respondents to the survey, which was performed on behalf of computer memory experts Crucial.com, claimed the emotion at the heart of these reactions was frustration. 65% of people confessed to it. A mere 10% admitted to anger. 16% said they had no idea why their computer was acting up. 46% thought that it was malware, which seems, according to this opinion article, seems a touch optimistic. Then there were 12% who clearly participated in the survey while lying on a chaise lounge in their psychiatrist's office. They were the people who blamed themselves. Crucial got together with with the mild-mannered Lou Ferrigno to launch a competition to find the finest frustrated computer-inspired roar, and I'm not going to play it. Apparently, though, there is a $5,000 prize if you have the best 30-second video of yourself losing it at your computer, which I guess is a free viral marketing thing for Crucial. But let's see, 7% of 18 to 34-year-olds who did the survey and admitted to experiencing the ultimate breakdown in front of their computer. Apparently, 7% said that they cried. Only 2% of those 35 and over admitted this, because we're tougher. We're at least, 5% tougher.
I would think the ultimate breakdown would be a heart attack or stroke, particularly one that was fatal.
Or calling into a show. That's true. That's true. But then you wouldn't respond to the survey.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't.
You kind of opt out that way.
Strangely, nobody told us they had died. Well,
so, if you're unable to take this survey because you're dead, please.
In other legal stuff, while we're dancing around that, Twitter just released its latest transparency report detailing government requests for information, content removal requests, and copyright takedowns. Not just one or two, but all three of those categories are up in the first half of this year. The lion's share of the requests are copyright takedowns requested by Jay Lee of his photo of you. No, I'm kidding. Between January 1 and June 30th, copyright takedowns jumped 76%. Twitter doesn't provide much details about the requests, but they would include copyrighted photos, songs, and videos uploaded to the site, and they affected 22,399 user accounts. Let's see, content removal requests make up a much smaller slice of the report, though the increase was similarly sharp. The number of requests jumped from 42 to 60, which is a tenfold increase since they started publishing its transparency report. The requests come from governments around the world, namely Brazil, Turkey, and the United States, all of whom made multiple requests.
Were they all government requests? I know I had Twitter remove
for
content.
Content removal?
Yeah.
But it wasn't like copyright.
It was copyright.
See, they distinguish between copyright takedowns and content removal requests. Let's see. They all made multiple requests. It also includes the information implicated in Twitter's new country withheld content tool, which lets the microblogging service block particular content in countries where it may be illegal. Let's see. And then information requests went up from 1,009 at the end of 2012 to 1,157 in the most recent period, which that's kind of stayed the same, even though the number did go up. Let's see. These requests crop up during things like terrorism investigations and missing persons searches. They're also the same types of requests as made by a judge against an Occupy Wall Street protester in the widely publicized case of subpoenaed tweets last year. The court eventually won access to the tweets. So at least you know it's happening. It would be very easy for Twitter to not say anything, and then you wouldn't know all this was going on. Oh, and here's one where you also want some transparency. You know, the Samsung Galaxy S4 is a good phone. It's fast, it's big, it's thin, and it's completely deserving of being in people's pockets. But Samsung had to gild the lily. They got caught cheating on benchmark tests to make the S4 look better. Essentially, the S4 is specially tweaked to be better at benchmarking than anything else it does. Isn't that fascinating? Anand Tech found that the S4 games its GPU to spit out a 533 megahertz clock speed in certain benchmark tests. I'm not going to list what they are. While most every other app and game performance is limited to 480 megahertz. Obviously, 533 megahertz sounds more impressive than 480. It gets better, though. Even the CPU lies in certain benchmark tests. In GL benchmark 2.5.1, the CPU clocks in at 1.2 gigahertz and never dips below it. In GFX bench 2.7, the CPU can go to 500 megahertz. 250 megahertz virtual frequency. Basically, when the S4 is in GL benchmark 2.5.1 and other benchmark tests, it's allowed to run in a higher performance mode, an unnatural boost to make its numbers look better in fake situations while hiding real-life performance.
Now, there's a historical parallel to this. Back in the 90s...
The old Intel...
ATI. Oh, ATI was caught boosting benchmarks on certain... some of its cards.
There were some accusations that Intel and some others that they were doing things to make the performance on particular benchmarks. Samsung did respond with a statement. Under ordinary conditions, the Galaxy S4 has been designed to allow a maximum GPU frequency of 533 megahertz. However, the maximum frequency is lowered to 480 megahertz for certain gaming apps that may cause an overload when they are used for a prolonged period of time in full screen mode. Meanwhile, a maximum GPU frequency of 533 megahertz is applicable for running apps that are usually used in full screen mode, such as the browser, gallery, camera, video player, and certain benchmarking apps. I like that. Slip that one in. Because it's like, your camera, yeah, that really needs serious GPU, right? To display your picture you just took?
Yes.
That's not moving or doing any of that compared to games? So a GPU is for gaming more than anything else, and their statement says they slow it down for that, and it's only fast for stuff that's not going to tax it too much. Anyways, but they got caught, so that's good. And now into Android, you know, for tablet stuff. Well, I guess Android versus iOS, the grudge match. Apparently, Android is winning in numbers as far as downloads. They beat the Apple App Store by 10% in the second quarter, but Apple pocketed all the money. Apple got 2.3 times as much revenue. Given that the majority of people worldwide use Android devices, it's no surprise that Google Play app downloads far outpace those from the App Store, but Apple still is getting people to put their money in. I think part of it's because if you sign up with the App Store, you've got to put in a credit card. Isn't that, I think it's required, where the Play Store will let you not, you don't have to do that to get free stuff. So, of course, on the Apple App Store, you've already put in your card, so if you see something you like and you click, oh, okay, I'll buy that, the transaction goes through, where on Google, that first time you buy one, you have to notice it, you know, you have to put in your card and do all those steps. So it's not all that surprising. But clearly Apple knows how to squeeze the bucks out of their people, out of their customer base. And Google, is trying to not be evil on that one. And then this one's interesting, the Google Moto X. Says the headline is, with Moto X, Google Android is about to have its iPhone moment. With so many different Android phone models comes a wide variance in hardware, software, and design, so a single Android phone can't compete against the iPhone, or can it? Apparently, this is the Moto X handset is going to be the one that can stand up to and be compared directly with the iPhone, and so we'll be keeping an eye on that. You know, the Nexus is still around, but Moto X is really the bigger play. The Nexus lines of phones was meant to show handset makers how to push the envelope with their hardware and software. But that's changed. Now Google can't really compete with the high-end flagships like Samsung, HTC, and LG have. But now Motorola can step in. Since Google owns a hardware company, it can push forward its own version of an Android handset, and it can do it without competing directly against the flagship phones of its hardware partners. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. And let's see, given the expected hardware in the Moto X, this is interesting. This isn't a phone that's likely to retail for $600 or more at full price. Instead, it's looking more like $300 or so. That's this person's estimate. That should make a pretty affordable Android phone with solid performance, and it'll be interesting to see it as a competitor for the iPhone. And finally, the iOS 7 beta. This is just – okay, I guess I should start. This gets into the rumory territory, because some of the information inside the iOS 7 beta suggests that that there is a non-Retina A6 powered iPad mini in development. In other words, what this suggests is that the next iPad mini will get a processor bump, but that the screen is not it won't be a Retina display. It'll be the same kind of screen as it's got right now. I'm not going to go through all the gritty details where they found the setting thing that says what the product ID is and all that kind of stuff. Just suffice it to say that at the very least they're testing a non-Retina iPad mini, but that doesn't preclude them from actually doing one that does have the Retina display. And that's the news.
All right. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. Looks like we do have a call in the queue, but we have plenty of open lines if you would like to be a part of the show tonight.
We should point out before we continue.
There is no geek gathering on Friday. Well, there is a geek gathering. It's in Las Vegas at the Rio Hotel.
But it's only three of you, so.
Yeah.
No, three of us and 16,000 of our favorite hacker buddies. It's going to be a geek gathering. This is the kind of geek gathering I dream of having. I am Dark Tangent. No, we're having, Barrett, Inflicted, and myself annually have been going to DEF CON. This year it falls right on the first Friday of the month. So we'll
be. First Friday before the first Saturday?
After the last Thursday. So it's, or something.
Something like that.
Inflicted were here, he would be able to give us a
He's confusing.
In a bar in Las Vegas right now explaining the whole thing to somebody.
That's right.
He might be listening.
So there won't be one. Now, if you want to show up at cons, you can. Cons is open, and they'll be serving, liquor, and they have Wi-Fi.
Beer and coffee.
You can go there and pretend.
They don't serve liquor.
That's right.
I'm talking alcohol.
Alcohol. Yes.
So, I might show up. I might stop by and see who's there. So
I've got plans Friday. I won't be there.
See which food truck is there.
See which food truck that I won't eat from. And you can come, but the next Geek Gathering will be the first Friday in September. That'll be the first Houston.
The Jerry Lewis Telethon Geek Gathering?
That's right.
And I won't be at that
one.
Hey,
ladies.
And I won't be at that one, but you guys are going to do it anyway, right?
Yes. Right. We'll do it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. All right. Excellent. So I'm in the process of issuing a DMCA takedown notice because I found another person using my photo.
All right.
Not very happy about this.
Awesome. Is it to Twitter? Because then we can check it against their stats next time they announce their transparency stats.
Although there is when you do a DMCA takedown notice, some companies like WordPress and a few others use a website called Chilling Effects. They publish takedown notices to a site called Chilling Effects, so you can see the DMCA notices that have gone through.
Basically, if you own it and you're telling people to take it down, that shouldn't. The only people who that should chill are people who are being jerks about it.
I mean,
it's one thing when somebody steals your photo and uses it without attribution or anything, then. Asking them to take it down, it does not seem to be an extreme position.
No, not at all.
And so I wouldn't think that anybody who legitimately isn't trolling on that stuff would care if their, takedown notice is...
That's a pretty cool website.
Have you not seen it before?
Mm-mm, first time.
It's searchable.
It's neat. I'm going to dig a little deeper.
See if you're on there anymore.
I hope not.
You'll find all of mine. We'll find a bunch of mine on there. But what's interesting is you can go through the Chilling Effects website and you can see the DMCAs that were issued by like Paramount and different
big companies
against Google and various sites too.
Well, I should see if there's any Hearst.
But what's one of the complaints from some of the big publishers is that Chilling Effects, in essence, makes it easier to find pirated content, because if you go through and look for, you can find the torrent links and stuff like that for motion pictures and things that, you know, like.
So, only if it hasn't been taken down yet.
Right. If it hasn't been taken down yet, you can find it. And, you know, so there's that.
Sometimes that happens.
All right. So somebody's called in and has an info shot question. So Groovehouse.
Yes.
Let's have a. Oh, wait.
First up.
Oh. Why are we taking this call at all? I don't know. All right. He has one chance. Okay. You have the finger on the button.
You got it.
All right.
All right. First up on the show, we are going to speak with Scott.
Hey, Scott. What's up?
Who is the Attorney General that you were talking about in InfoShot?
It was a group of state attorneys general.
Oh, I see. Okay. Wonder whether it included Greg Abbott. That's Texas Attorney General.
Good question. Let's see, I'm trying to find the article, because then if you go to PC World, if you go to their site, PCWorld.com, you should be able to find it, and you may be able to follow some of their links and get more information on it. It was a group, so let's see. They didn't say how many, but it's multiple, and obviously it's a group of them that have proposed it, so...
Yeah.
You can look it up there. The only one they mentioned by name is the Attorney General of South Dakota.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Not who we thought it was.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
It's all right.
713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. So, it's what I have to do. And since we got no calls in the queue, I'll talk about DMCA stuff here a little bit.
It's fun to stay at the
DMCA. It's fun to,
it's not it's fun fun to get.
Issue a DMCA. Digital Millennium Copyright Act. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act is basically a copyright act that was enacted by our
digitally
government.
Done in the millennium?
Oh, Pete. Pete. SMH.
So much hate.
Pete's got you. Pete,
I was just liking your explanation. It's like
shaking my head.
It's
The
NASA, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, is a space administration.
Pete will now explain the DMCA to you. You know, when Pete is
basically the DMCA is when they went through and to kind of make national laws to define copyright infringement as far as the internet was concerned.
Right. When the internet came along, a lot of people saw the internet as basically a trough from which they could scoop content from and then splash it on their wall and call it art, their own art. So the DMCA protects copyright holders and gives copyright holders a legal recourse against copyright infringers. So a lot of sites, you know, and we were talking about this with in the news when Pete was talking about safe harbor for commenters. So basically, like within a situation where if I post something on my blog and a bunch of people come and make comments that are slanderous and libelous and whatever towards whoever, whether it's about that article or something else, I'm protected as the blog owner from those being prosecuted for those comments. Now, I can be asked to act in good faith and take them down. The same thing applies to sites that host content like Facebook or Google.
Pinterest would be a huge one.
Pinterest is one. So they're not held responsible or cannot be sued for having the content on their site if they have what they call a DMCA agent, and they enjoy safe harbors by having a means for you to contact them, say, here's my copyright complaint, and there's a certain way you have to word it. They have to respond to it. Then the person who infringed on the copyright or allegedly infringed has a recourse to make a counterclaim, but that protects the hosting provider. A lot of the better hosting providers have very clear definitions. Here's how you do it. This is what we want. Email this address. call this phone number or whatever. And those are great when they find sites like that. But you have a lot of other hosting providers that seem to have no idea about Safe Harbor. And they don't have a DMCA agent. And so it gets trickier to find.
And they act like you're accusing them of something.
They freak out a little bit. It's like, well, we didn't do that. That's our customer. And it's like, we didn't. It's like, it's all right. Calm down. So right now I'm looking at a company called ARVIXE, which is the hosting provider for a website that is, let's see, it's JRW Creative Group. And they're so creative that they design web video photography. They do all this, but they use my photo to
promote. What's a picture of?
It's the picture of Houston. It's my most stolen one. It's the one that I can always count on doing a Google image search and finding some jackhat that has decided to steal it. Because it represents Houston and people who want to do business. And what I really like is it represents people who are creative and do design.
And thievery. It represents
that.
May I touch your tablet, Peter?
713-526-5738. So tracking down the hosting provider for JRW Creative Group right now and see if I can figure out, I'm going to issue my DMCA to them and hopefully get this taken off there because, damn them.
Well, and while Jay's doing that, Dwight mentioned
they can license it from you.
They could license it from me. We'll see what happens
with
that.
Or they could take their own photo.
There you go.
Now, one thing you have to, to those listening who might decide that they want to protect their copyright, one thing you got to be careful of is your browser's cache. So you'll issue a takedown notice. You'll get a notice that they've taken it down. You go back to the site and the image is still there and say, I need to do a force refresh. Okay, now it's gone.
Mm. Internet Explorer seems particularly brutal about keeping the cached stuff even when you try to really push it.
Wow.
Because I've had a lot of customers where you change something on a website and they're like, it's still got the old picture.
So you were complaining that there's no settings out on the front of this when you first get it. Can I show you something cool? Watch. Swipe from the upper right corner. Boom.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't read the manual or any of that.
That's not in the manual. That's not in the manual. Oh, that's in the Android chip they have yet to plant in your head.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I with all the rumors and stuff about talking about all the iPad mini and so on, seeing with the Nexus 7 with the Retina display, I looked at one in the store and I liked the display.
It's got a great display.
And for the price and compared to even the basic Mac mini or Mac iPad mini, I pulled the trigger, and so now Android and the Nexus have a chance to win my loyalty. The difference from switching from an iPad to the Nexus in particular, because I mean it's sort of pure Android. It's not got there's no special front end on it like Samsung does or some of the other ones. I found it was a lot easier switch over, and it stays pretty intuitive and similar to the iPad. It's a lot closer together with the iOS than, say, Windows and Mac ever used to be. I didn't have any trouble switching between those, but I mean, it's just most.
Well, there are a lot of Apple
stuff.
Lawyers who will tell you that.
part of it though is it's sort of a tablet. When you put your fingers on it and make it do stuff,
right?
The limits, point and click is kind of how far can you go? I love there's some of the stuff that I saw immediately that I could tell was the we're doing it different than Apple, like the drag the button instead of it being a slide it to the from side to side, they have a circle around it and you just have to drag the button outside of the circle. And then it knows that you want
it. And you can also set it up I have the older Nexus 7 and you can set it up so that it has a finger pattern, say that you can.
See, like I said, I didn't read. Yeah. I just hooked it up, put in my Gmail stuff, and put on some apps that I like to use, and it worked, and I didn't have any issues. I love the size. I mean, it feels, it's like sci-fi light.
Yeah,
it's
very light.
So thin and so light. The bezels, the top and bottom bezels do seem like extremely large now that they've made the side ones a little thinner, but it's still.
But actually, if you're watching a movie or video,
that's true,
and you hold it like that, it's actually good for doing it that way.
But I have an iPad 2, and I usually sat and read with that sort of magazine style, and the weight of it did get to be an issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would get where when you're sitting reading for an extended period of time, it would make your hands sore. Mm-hmm. Where this one, with the one hand, I mean, you can switch hands and all that stuff. So I'm, and I think Apple really needs to watch it. Because mm-hmm. obviously Google's got the Retina display thing. The price is down what people thought Apple should do. Except before it was, Nexus doesn't have as much of a processor. Blah, blah. The specs on this are decent. It's got 2 gigs of RAM, and the pricing is such that a 32 gig one of these with LTE is going to be barely more expensive than a base, ultra base Wi-Fi mini.
So had you looked at the Kindle Fire HD at all?
No, I kind of felt like that was sort of a compromise, you know, because of what it was intended to do before. I did want to go with the kind of pure Android or pure iOS kind of thing. And it seemed to me that the Kindle Fire, it's like its roots as a reader only.
Yeah, it's an Amazon content consumption device. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, and I've gotten some content from Amazon, but not lots. And mostly, the biggest thing I use this for is to like look at Flipboard. I use it for Evernote. From a business perspective, that was important to me. And then sometimes I use them for Facebook and stuff like that. And so it kind of hit. I know what I use a tablet for already, and I may explore some of the other things to see what Android does that iOS doesn't. But I had a ton of apps on my iPad, and there's a bunch of them that I downloaded because they were free and then never
used them, right?
You know, played with them once and then that was it.
Yes,
and
I've got about a screen full of those on here.
So this is just like direct to work, and it does what I want. And you know, the other thing, I mean, form factor wise, it size and shape and all that, it does kind of remind me of my old Newton 2000, which I really liked and enjoyed and was very useful to me back in the day. And so this is sort of, it's what Apple could have done this a lot earlier. It's the color screen Newton that I always dreamed of type thing. So anyways, you know, that like I said, if somebody thought I was an Apple fanboy, then think about what that means when somebody goes and buys a different,
you'll have to get your
tablet device.
I got this week my Chromecast from Google, which is the little HDMI fob that you plug into the HDMI port, lets you stream video to your TV, and it's very nice. It's mostly potential. It's still very rough, but the ability to send anything from your browser to the TV is probably the best thing for me. I mean, I've already got a Netflix, you know, on Apple TV, and I've got YouTube. I can do pretty much what I want, but this ability to work with the browser on the TV is very good.
I've heard if you were traveling, the ability to then still keep, you know, up with your Netflix stuff or whatever in a hotel room and not be worried about leaving it behind when you go would be a big difference.
The other nice thing is that it's platform agnostic in that it works with Android or iOS. Although it's really is a beta device that, you know, Chrome on the iPad and iPhone won't let you show the tabs from that yet. I'm not sure that Android will. I haven't tested it with an Android device yet. But it has a, you know, it's still getting there. But for $35...
Right, yeah, it's hard to miss.
Well, you know, the Chromecast, as exciting as it is, as soon as I saw it, I could picture it in the bottom of the milk crate with all the other cables and that don't see the light of day
anymore.
I could
see it being an easy way to outfit a meeting room, though, where it'd be very easy for somebody to just pop Chrome, or if they, because most people, if they're going to meeting, if they're taking around a laptop or traveling that way with a tablet or laptop, they're going to have Chrome.
Yeah, it'd be great.
They could download the different apps for it. And imagine, I wonder, you know, how it would work with like a 4K TV.
Well, it doesn't support 4K, but it does do 5.1 channel audio.
because I think ultimately when 4K
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air while we're talking about the Chromecast, we can have
geeky stuff.
Call in. I don't have a problem with the conversation. I just want to make sure we're putting the number
absolutely
out there. 713-526-KPFT because Groove House, every minute that he doesn't answer a phone, the more like a woman he becomes.
Oh,
oh man.
Because he needs to man the
you
phones.
You may not make it to DEF CON.
He's going to hack
or
me.
Or you're going to make it
to hack you before
he's
you
gonna
get
hack
there.
You up.
You're going to make it to DEF CON 4.
I'm
going to
hack you up like a hairball.
We're at DEF CON 3 right now.
He's going to hack me up like Reva hacks up my hairball.
My utopian future thing, though, is I do think that like the 4K... I think it's going to take a good long time for 4K to get, like, seriously adopted.
Have you seen just the like under $1,000 4K TV?
Yeah, you can see where the prices are dropping to that, but still.
Oh, they're
I'm
under
not,
under $1,000?
There is an under $1,000.
For what size screen?
It's like a 50-inch. It's not bad.
Wow.
It's, let me see if I can.
But I think,
but there's not much content for
I think
yet.
4K, the thing that's going to happen, though, is 4K is when you start hitting where the monitor that you could watch entertainment on and the monitor that you use for computing and doing that stuff, that's when they kind of come together and end up being sort of the same thing.
Seiki is then the brand name. Seiki Digital 50-inch 4K ultra high definition 120Hz LED HDTV 1092.
Wi-Fi enabled? Not, just plug in the Chromecast.
So, see, eventually my dream computer setup will be a, like, recliner in the middle of a big empty room with three 4K monitors, 50-inch, three 50-inch 4K monitors at a suitable distance and a Bluetooth keyboard and a trackpad. It could be perfect. See, my dream office is more like a James Bond villain's lair than a, like, Google office.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, the Apple TV is great. See, the thing is, it much like I think the Chromecast would be for me, it's cool, and a few things that it does very well, and when I need to use them, it's good to have them, but I don't use it that often. I'm not getting my money's worth out of it necessarily.
Have you done much with AirPlay mirroring?
Yeah, I have, and that's one of the things I really like the best is the, but unfortunately, and I'm sure you're experiencing this with all the cord cutting you're doing, you know, you have to pick up one remote, do this, then you have to switch remotes to use the other device. You know, so like I have to pick up the main remote for the TV, switch the input over to the Apple TV, then I pick up the Apple TV remote and use that.
One of the interesting things about the Chromecast is it takes advantage of this capability in newer TVs where when it comes on, it switches the source automatically. So when you call up a tab and you go to they call it casting, the tab from your computer over to it automatically switches to the Chromecast. So you don't have to turn it on. You just say, I want to do it, and it happens.
Of course, to get off of it, you have to, like...
You have to go back to it and stop casting, and then it comes back to this really pretty screen and just sits there. You can't actually turn it off. You switch away from it. So then you
have
to do it.
Yeah, but the thing is that but with all the different devices, whether it's a Chromecast and an Apple TV and a DVD player and whatever else, you've got multiple remotes, you have to know that, okay, now I'm switching gears. I am no longer changing the cable set-top box. I'm
right.
Now doing right. This. For someone like you or me or Pete or Groovehouse, that's not a big deal. You know, here's my array of remotes, and I know I'm going to grab this one and do this.
Yeah.
It's a little fiddly at times, but we know what we're doing.
Right.
But it's like, Cynthia, change the TV over to Apple TV and bring up Netflix.
Right. Lisa's the same way.
I'm going to stab you to death.
You probably want to invest, and if you look, you can find deals on them for $50 to $75. A Logitech remote that you put in, you plug it in with USB.
Well, I don't think you actually need
that. And you
that.
Can tell it by activities, though. It's like, push the button that says play a movie, and it'll do...
This is your remote, your iPhone. Is there a Sony iPhone app for that controls the television? I bet there
it's an LG
Oh, it's an LG. Is there an LG app that controls the TV?
There is, but I don't know if it'll let me put other stuff. So you say what? You use the iPhone. You still have to go back and forth between the different.
You just
apps
have to switch between the apps, but you
might
just
as well switch between the remotes.
So no, because you just do this. You just do the double tap. You got it. Yeah, you start using them. They're all right there.
Again, that's not a problem.
See, the Logitech, the thing is, it does buy activities, and so I got one because I bought one because I got DirecTV. And the DirecTV Universal remote wouldn't talk to my old receiver, and where this the Logitech, the Harmony remote would. I didn't have to get a very fancy one because I don't have that many devices. But the nice part is it does stuff by activity, and you hook it up with a USB to your computer, and then you tell it what steps to do when you push the button. So
the thing that will eventually come. Is going to be something that aggregates all the contents from all the media sources that you have. So you'll be able to bring up a single console. You'll look something up. It'll say, I'll look up Raiders of the Lost Ark. Okay, here it is available on Netflix. Here it is available on pay-per-view on Comcast. And here it is in your media library. Which one do you want to watch?
And actually, there was software that did that. And a hardware device, that was Boxy. That was the original idea behind Boxy, which just got bought by Samsung and vanished.
And vanished.
Right.
Here's a torrent of Raiders of the Lost.
Whatever.
So.
But if you had a media interface that would say, okay, look, you know, you're going to look for the show you want to watch. You're going to search. Because the X1's kind of close because I can search and it can say, okay, here's the show. It'll be on Thursday at 2 o'clock. Do you want to record it? Do you want to set a reminder here? And, oh, by the way, it's also available on demand. Do you want to watch it now?
Well, there's no reason that you couldn't create or say something. You know, Logitech makes these really great programmable remotes. What if somebody just made a Logitech remote, universal remote app? That you know, you say, okay, I have this television set, I have an Apple TV, I have a Chromecast, here's what I have, and then it essentially builds a remote for you.
But it would have to, I'm talking about something beyond the remote, something that would actually talk to the API at Netflix to aggregate the content from them. It would look at Amazon and aggregate the content from them. So it would look at the different sources and aggregate all of the content and make it searchable. So you start searching, it would know, okay, I'm going to ask Netflix if they have this. Fast.
Right. Yeah, so that was the original idea behind Box.
That would be
and
the
then
cool.
Going beyond that, you could
and
have
then
the
it
universal...
would switch to the device that it needed to. The TV would smartly switch over to the input for the device that you chose, or it would all go through that one box.
Right.
And then you go beyond that, and you get the universal remote that controls the universe. And so you say, I want to watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it says, it's on for free in 2 months. Do you want to go there? Just kidding.
No, I mean, I remember having the same kind of conversation about, I remember telling somebody, 20 years ago or more, actually much more than 20, like 25 years ago, I said, you know, there's going to come a day when those record albums of yours aren't going to be worth anything. It's all going to be in a box about the size of a shoebox. That's crazy talk.
We skipped right past Men in Black because there was that in the first Men in Black movie. He had a disc that was about the size of a quarter, and Tommy Lee Jones said, "Great, now I got to buy the White Album again." And except we jumped past the CD, right past the little quarter sized one, right to basically virtually no size. It's just on a device in your pocket.
713-526-5738. We're coming up on the top of the hour, so we are running out of time to take calls in the first hour of the show. were you screening a call? Or was it just something else?
I was just chatting on the phone.
Just having a manly conversation.
Having a little talk, yes.
Having a talking to someone. All right, 713-526-5. So what?
I did what? Speak to someone on the phone, and they wanted you guys to talk about the Google dashboard and all the stuff that's being kept, all the information being kept that you can see, all previous Google Docs, all your YouTube videos, all that stuff.
The Google dashboard? Are you familiar?
Apparently there was an article in the Wall Street Journal Marketplace section about this new.
I'm familiar with it, but I haven't explored it too much.
Yeah.
But it's essentially one place to go to see all of your activity in Google.
Right.
And the last time I looked in it, it wasn't necessarily all that intuitive. But it, you know, looks a lot like the settings stuff in most Google products.
Gotcha.
But it's there.
Yeah, here's the headline, 64,019 searches, a dark journey into my Google history on the Wall Street Journal blog. Yeah.
Scary.
So is it available now?
It's google.com/dashboard.
Account activity, here we go.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I haven't signed up for it. I need to sign up for it.
It's...
Begin indexing.
It's just now starting.
All right, so we got plenty
just
of...
Just don't choose the non-Euclidean geometry one, or...
Okay.
Google Cthulhu.
Cthugal. Cthugal. Cthugal.
There you go.
713-526-5738. You can save us from ourselves. If you do call in and we run out of time here in the first hour, we will make sure that we bring you on in the second hour. You can get on hold. It's always weird when we're missing a chunk of the hosts. It always seems like the calls
chunk of hosts.
Especially depending on what chunk of the hosts we're missing. You know, when Barrett forgets his mustache wax.
I'm sporting the handlebar tonight in the Missing Geek. In memory of Barrett, I have my mustache twirled.
He's your new man crush, isn't he?
It appears that the
what?
He's your new man crush, isn't he?
He has been for some time, but Dwight and I fight over him.
It appears that the internet is back for the station.
Yeah, I've been on it for a while. Oh, wait, okay. Wait a minute.
You want me to switch off to it?
I was on my phone, actually. I wonder if it's... Oh, turn on Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi, turn on.
Computer.
Wi-Fi, begin. Internet. Picture go fast.
All open right. Browser.
I like when Cynthia impersonates my my talking navigation system. She always impersonates me. Eject passenger. right. 713. Well, that drained my battery. I was using my phone as a hotspot for a while. It was draining.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yes.
Listen to that. Boy, Groovehouse is giving us his subliminal messages and stuff. You know, in my mind, I... Never mind. 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with us, we are approaching the end of the first hour of Programming Technology Bites, in which we have covered all kinds of great topics, such as the DMCA and the Nexus 7. You just got your update on your first gen Nexus.
Yes,
7,
I did.
Right?
I got the 4.3 upgrade. One of the things it gives you is multiple user accounts. So
really,
yes, on the Nexus 7. Yes, on the
see, that's the thing that's sadly missing from the iPad.
Yeah, I know you've wanted that for a while.
Well, I did until I just realized it was going to be easier to get her own iPad.
And that's what Apple wants you to do.
Yeah, there is no Wii and iPad.
Exactly.
But there's close to a Wii and
but
a
there
Nexus.
Is a Wii iPad.
It's called the Mini.
Oh, you guys are so funny. Hilarity ensues. All right, well, you know, we're missing our geeks, so we're hoping that you'll fill in the gaps in the second hour of Technology Bites. You're going to take a short break here and do some station business. Some station business. And be all responsible and stuff, because that's the kind of responsible programmers we are. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes after these brief messages. So stick around. This is Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Dwight.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
Mendy Groovehouse. We'll be right back.
You can feed your family in KPFT, too. KPFT partners with local grocery stores in neighborhoods near you. When you purchase your groceries using KPFT cards, you make a donation to the station. While those nutritious foods help build strong bodies, you can also nourish KPFT with thought-provoking programming. For more information, visit kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 314. Now your food dollars can become pennies for our thoughts at KPFT. Thank you from KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
Places you go to get the quick news. You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touch our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations. You need a choice.
And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more. People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
And we're back. Hey, hey, Groovehouse, you should look at... Do you follow Joshua A. Justice on Twitter? He favorited one of my tweets, and he said... He said his Twitter stream looked like it turned into a Chevy Cruze commercial. Chevy commercial. Oh! Uh-oh, there's something going on there. Nope. All right. Just drop it. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air tonight. 713-526-KPFT.
What, no Barrett time tonight?
Peter time.
Tucking head time.
Well, you know, we would normally have... Well, actually, not normally, because a lot of times we have had Barrett time when we're supposed to have Barrett time. So now we have no Barrett, therefore we have time. Or yet, something.
1,000 miles away, Barrett suddenly has felt a strange need to tell the guy next to him at the bar about upcoming events in Houston. He's reading it off his...
Well, for the geek calendar, there's going to be tomorrow night. There's going to be the beer up at the Hofbrau House in Las Vegas. That'll be the first noteworthy event where giant steins of beer are consumed along with food in the at the Hofbrau House in Las Vegas. And I know this is not true for the Hofbrau House in Munich because I went there looking for this. And it's not true. There, but at the Hofbrau House in Las Vegas, the waitresses dress in scanty costumes and can be talked into paddling people for their birthday or just swatting them with a big wooden paddle. These guys get drunk. They bring one of the waitresses over. The guy like bends over, holds onto the table, and he gets swatted really hard.
What I heard is that the original Hofbrau, they did that, but then it got out of hand and turned into World War II.
Oompa. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us here tonight on Technology Bites. We've got all of our open lines are open.
And we have all our devices laying out
Spread on the table waiting to help you. Another one.
Another update?
Another update. Well, this is for this Galaxy S3 I have. And it's and I don't know what this is. So
somebody needs to hack it so that the little Android robot looks like Wall-E.
That's funny. An excellent idea.
It has.
This is just like not a good night.
Well, so when you go to Vegas, is there some place I know they've got a lot of great places to eat. Is there some place you look forward to going to on that besides the beer thing?
And I can't remember the name of the place that we found, but we found a great restaurant over at the Cosmo last year that we went and had. It was an Italian restaurant. It was super good. But I haven't found, and then there's the In-N-Out Burger, which is always a treat. So
I guess a lot of the places that are the marquee stuff is probably crazy expensive because it's all like star
yeah,
power stuff.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that you really want to eat at it is just pricey. And imagine this. People that attend DEF CON really aren't dressed to go eat nice places.
No.
You know, it's the only huge convention where the attendee fact has a special item that suggests the wearing of deodorant and bathing. Because the nerds, they stink. They stink, stink, stink. All right, so my internet is down again.
Yeah.
And I have a little bit of battery life left I might want to use. But
just
maybe
guaranteeing
not.
Some calls that need internet.
Internet, I'm not worried about it. These people.
Bring it.
Bring your internet requests. 713-526.
Oh, look at the topic.
I know. The topic on this
we
call.
We can't help you. We don't have any internet either.
Or we can just sympathize.
We can just sympathize.
It's basically just a mule fest. We're just going, we got no internet. All right. Are we taking the calls or are you giving us the calls or how are we doing this?
I'll give you the call.
You give me the call?
That's the way it works, right? You guys hang up?
Yes.
I give you the call.
I just wanted to make sure because you've taken on
just
the extra
because
duty.
I moved one seat over. Doesn't mean I still can't
I really
handle the responsibility.
Just not upset you right now.
Can't handle the responsibility on the right side.
I wasn't
of the room.
Suggesting
I
any such thing. I
and
was
the right.
I was recognizing
Afflicted
that
Afflicted can do it. I can do it.
Can he? Can he?
Typically, never mind. Groomhouse is the man. He's in fact two men. So,
one personality though.
Well, he is the most fascinating man alive. I don't often run
I'm not
the
miss
board,
him
but when I do, I also
I bet
the
you're
phone.
Not.
I love you, man.
Yeah,
I swear to
sure.
God, I do.
Sure you
do. I do, man. You're a landmine of emotional weirdness. Minefield's what I meant to say. I stepped on a groove.
Minecraft.
This one went off. This one didn't. There's no rhyme or reason. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Daniel.
Daniel, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, what's going on, guys? All right, so.
Yeah.
Do you want to start with the crazy one of the HP? They're both desktops. I've got one that was an HP desktop, and I used a Dell intended XP restore disk. Okay, so we've got that. So when it installed, it like isn't even reading that there's a LAN connection in the back. Like I have internet to it, it works, everything's good. I have two desktops on top of each other, and I can plug the other one in, the internet runs. So I know the cord is good.
Now, if you used a Dell recovery disk on an HP, then chances are you did not get the necessary drivers to light up the Ethernet adapter.
Yeah, and see, the disk did even say there's no drivers on this disk. It's only an
It's only the operating system.
It's only the operating system. Exactly. So it wiped it as a Dell would.
Yeah. So
okay,
you need to find the HP drivers for the Ethernet to get your Ethernet.
Now, how would I do that? I've been looking for them on the Internet. I can't find them. CNET.
No, you go to HP's site. First of all, never download a driver for one brand from anywhere else other than that manufacturer's website. So if you Google search, like you got to figure out what. So the HP has a model number, right?
Yeah.
So if you put in the model number search, if you go to the HP website, go to support, I think support.hp.com.
Yeah.
And go to their site and put in the model number of that computer. You'll get to a page that has all of the downloads that are specific for that computer. And you'll need to download them onto a computer that is connected to the internet.
Yeah, via USB and then just open the program up on the HP itself.
Right,
later.
And install them on the other computer,
okay.
No problem.
Okay, so check it. So I'm looking at a tag with a crap load of numbers on them. Which one would be the model number? Is it the PIN number, the HP S number, serial number?
It's going to be, a lot of times it's on the front of the computer.
Okay.
It's going to say like HP, and I forget the model number.
They're like P100 or things like that. Okay,
yeah.
This is an HP compact. So is that, okay, that's just a model.
It sounds kind of old if it's a compact.
Yeah, they're pretty old school. I like to bring them back from the dead. I Frankenstein a lot of stuff.
All right. Well, if you go to I'm sure they're going to be on the HP site, but you got to find out whatever it is that's considered the model number, not the serial number. The serial number won't be helpful, but there's going to be like a model number, and it's going to have some letters and numbers in it. It's like, you know, the CP2000 or whatever.
Okay.
And find
so
that
I,
model
so find
number.
The model number. Find so the model second, number. I have another desktop right below it. They're stacked, and it is a Dell. It works fine. I can get on the internet the whole nine yards. My USB ports are totally jacked. I'll plug in anything other than a mouse. It reads a mouse and et cetera. But you plug in a flash drive or a hard drive, and it blue screens it, memory dumps it, and wants to, just die. And I don't know if there's an improper driver or what the deal is with
what
that.
What operating system are you running on?
It's Windows XP on that as well.
And you're all the way up to Service Pack 3 and all that good stuff?
Let me check that. I should be. Because I went to their site and I downloaded, you get a new computer or used computer for somebody, and I wiped it clean with all the standard programs and all.
Right.
And then I downloaded the fresh Windows updates.
Right.
Let me left.
You're probably all the way. You should be up to XP Service Pack 3. Are you installed just an XP disk on the Dell?
Now, the Dell actually had XP that was running properly. The person, I forget exactly what I did to it. Because I don't remember having to use the disk on it.
If you go and look at the device,
Yeah, it's the Service Pack 3.
All right, if you look at the device manager.
I gotcha.
And do you have any exclamation points or question marks on any of that?
No, there's no big ugly yellow stuff. I see I've got eight ports all together, and the top four all say Intel, and then they have a 24D2, 24D, whatever, and it says, okay. Yeah, so they're all, indication that there's something wrong.
No, I mean, I don't know why it would be blue screening if you're plugging in a USB device into one of the USB ports unless the USB port is shorting out or has some other problem.
It's all of them, though. I've tried multiple ones.
The USB ports are kind of like, I think on the lower end model Dells, it's not like
All chained together.
They're all chained together into one.
Yeah.
Is it trying to go and get the drivers for whatever device you just hooked up?
When you plug a USB device into the computer, it initializes the device, it installs drivers for it.
Yeah. I mean, that's typically what would happen. And so maybe the computer's, crashing because of that.
It could be. I mean, it's crashing at the point that it's trying to install device drivers for the USB device, but that's so. I've never seen that. That's so uncommon.
I mean, and not just like installizing, reading new hardware, boom, and then a die. I mean, you plug it in and it blue screens instantly.
Do you get the? Does it stop long enough so you can read the stop error?
It's not just like totally dumping the memory instantaneously and then cutting off. I can read what it's doing, but I don't think I remember what it said.
Well, you can take that stop error and try plugging it into Google and see if you can find any suggestions on it.
Okay.
You might go to the Dell site and update your chipset drivers and update any of your other device drivers, but tell
okay,
you...
Okay, let me write that down. Wow, this bowl is molded to this table. Dell site.
If you go to support.dell.com, again, plug in the model number.
Update chipset.
They have chipset drivers, and they have newer versions of these drivers available. Sometimes they release new versions. Sometimes that can help clear up issues that you might be having with devices. But check out, it can get kind of tricky, but there will be chipset drivers. They'll say recommended and optional. Get any of the recommended updated ones.
Okay.
Get the latest versions and download those and install them.
And then chipset drivers, and then anything else I would want to try to update the drivers on? Or
I would go ahead and update the video driver, update the network driver, and update the network and the video or the display driver. I mean, I would update those.
Slash display.
But there's also, they have drive, they might have, they, They're going to have all kinds of stuff.
Audio.
Yeah, and I've been to pages like that. I know quite a bit about what you're talking about. I just haven't been able to find the specific ones that I need. Now, I did run a program, I think CNET or something, some website that I trust, and they downloaded it. I downloaded it. I ran it. It said it identified some problems in my USB drivers or something, and to give them money and they'll fix it, you know. So at least that program was trying to point me in that direction. I don't know whether or not that information's valid.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily trust that, but it might be. And another thing you can do too is go through, if you go into your if you go into the device manager and you uninstall the USB, all the USB instances, and then you reboot the computer, let it redetect the USB and reinitialize or reinstall the drivers. Sometimes that helps.
Okay, but by uninstalling them, and then if I turn it back on, and then it doesn't do that, am I told? Well, I guess I'm totally screwed.
I don't think you would be. I think it'll do is it'll look for the drivers, it'll reinstall them. But yes, obviously, if it didn't reinstall the drivers, then you would lose functionality and anything connected to USB. But I've never seen that happen.
Okay, all right. And then uninstalling and then restart. You know, this is crazy because I'm sitting here dealing with this crap, and then I turn on my KPFT while I do stuff on my computer, and it's, you know, this show talking about all these electronics, and I'm like, what the crap? That's really cool that, you know, the universe kind of points you in that direction. Very, very ironic, like, because I know you guys are out there, but it's like, you guys are only on one day a week, and I never remember when the show is, but I just
we usually aren't on this time of day. We just heard you were having problems.
That's the way it works, doesn't it? All right, well, it's like on a TV show, whenever they cut on the TV, and within 2 seconds, there's valid information, necessary information, like right away.
Well, very sometimes much it, sometimes
that,
things
of
have
that
a
nature,
way of working
Simpson,
out.
Simpson-esque, you know.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for your call, man.
All good right. Luck. You guys have a great night. Appreciate it.
All right. You too.
All right. Bye.
All right.
Good luck with your bowl, man. stuck to the table.
Uh-huh.
It's all good.
Yeah. I don't want to hear about things stuck to his computer table. All right, 713-526-5738.
We're on a roll. We got another call in the queue.
Wow.
Just doubled our calls.
Two calls.
We're rocking. The second hour, two calls.
Got room for five more.
All right, we got room in the queue. Groovehouse is letting to talk to you. Something like that. 713-526-5738.
Give him something to do. Not much of a rapper, are you?
Don't get mad when he looks sideways at you. 713-526-5738. He got to get mad at the things you do. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. Groovehouse, he becomes more manly every phone call, so help him.
Yes.
Phone testosterone.
Testosterone.
Testosterone. There you go. I had to save that joke. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Charles.
Charles, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
My computer just died last weekend. I'm going to build another one this weekend.
Okay.
I'm looking at the different processors and motherboards. I'm really processors. I'm looking at the AMD family and Intel. And because of the budget, the price ratio, I'm looking at the A10 and the FX series. What do y'all recommend? How do y'all like the AMDs in the first place?
AMD is fine. I have no problems with AMD chips.
What are you doing with your computer? What's your...
Well, actually, I'm a developer, and I use Visual Studio, and I play around with Photoshop and stuff like that. But it's not. But my old computer, which was the old series AMD, ran fine with everything. So I don't think I'm going to be pushing it that hard with the A10 or the FX 43, 63, or 83 series, 8300 series.
You'd probably be just fine with AMD.
AMD?
Yeah.
Because I've been reading about it, and they said that they have a heating problem or something, they overheat or whatever.
Well, any chip, any high-end CPU is going to generate heat, and you want to make sure that you, if you build one, that you get proper cooling into your computer case. That would include like a heat sink on the CPU
and a fan,
on the CPU.
Oh, yeah,
and
ventilation. Yeah. That goes without saying.
I haven't heard of any of them necessarily overheating unless they're in an improperly ventilated computer.
Well, I didn't know about, I mean, actually, I've been reading it's not overheating. It just went a lot hotter than the Intel.
I haven't, I mean, that may very well be true, but my, my school of thought on that is that CPUs that are being marketed right now, if one runs hotter than the other, I mean, I just put in a bigger fan.
Okay. I mean, all right. Hey, can I ask you another question real quick?
Sure.
As far as developing, looking into the open source world, and I'm looking at doing some PHP, I'm looking for a free IDE. And I'm looking at Notepad++ or Bluefish. Do y'all have any recommendations?
The one I used to use, I have one that I bought that's for Mac, so it wouldn't help you. Let's see what other people are using. It seems like the best ones usually are ones that you have to pay for. But I use Coda on Mac. Some people use Eclipse. Let's see what other ones. So I haven't checked them lately. I mean, obviously Notepad++, I've seen people mention that. PHP Storm, some people talk about. I think that one you might have to buy.
Because I was looking at NetBeans and, all these, I was comparing the free ones, and they were getting pretty good ratings, and the feature seems pretty good, but I was thinking there's like 20 of them out there, so which one would you want to use? Or what's the most popular one, most one that the masses are kind of.
See, I think the problem is it just sort of depends what you're doing and what platform you're on. On Mac, lots of people use Coda, and that's what I use.
Yeah.
People who are in enterprise doing stuff probably are using, like, the Zend, the one from Zend.
Yes. Yeah. Well, my platform is a Windows, so I'm using Windows API. But I'm also looking at the Linux operating system also.
I'd say download some of the free ones and see which one kind of fits you. I don't know if...
Yeah, but I'm going to download 3 or 4, and, you know, you got to play around, see which one's like the best. I'm going to go ahead and just get one and learn it.
There you go.
I don't have any.
Not one that's dominant like it used to be. There used to be a free one from Zend that I really liked that had good syntax highlighting and all that kinds of stuff. And then they decided they wanted to make more cash, and so now you can't really get a free one from them. And they charge pretty well for their IDE. Now it's nice and it works real well, but I've just not had cause to use an IDE on a PC in the past few years, so I haven't had to. I grabbed one. It did enough for the like 5 things that I ever did on it, as opposed to on the Mac.
If Barrett were here, he could answer that maybe a little bit better. Maybe call in next week.
He'd tell you to use VI or Emacs or
Okay. Get
Linux and do it on the
timeline. All right.
I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for your call tonight.
Sorry, we couldn't help.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. 713-526-573. I see another call came in. So we're on a roll. People actually want to call into the show. That's good. 713-526-KPFT.
Still have room for more.
We do. We have lots of open lines, and Groovehouse has tons of willingness.
In case you were afraid to call when Flicted was here, he's not here, so you can call in. You won't be getting his attitude and deadpan humor when you call. So
usually
feel
he's just
safe.
Almost napping in there. But unless he gets something, you know, he's passionate about. Comes up in conversation.
True.
Then he'll derail everything. All right. 713-526-5738. So somebody out there will probably be sure and tell Flicted that we smack talked him.
Oh, he'll listen to the podcast.
Oh, he knows. He knows already.
He can feel it.
Yeah. He'll probably just, you know, I'll walk into the Rio tomorrow and then he'll just loom up out of the shadows and punch me. 713-526-5738. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hi, guys. I got a couple of questions. One is about my iPhone, and the other one is about Gmail.
Okay.
Let me ask you about Gmail first. I don't know if I talked to you guys before. You know, I'm a photographer, and I send a lot of pictures over email, and I used to put them in a zip file for years and years and years. You know what a zip file is, and all of a sudden, Gmail don't want they won't allow you to use zip files anymore. You have to put them in what they call Google Drive, which is, my understanding, that's nothing but the cloud.
Well, you can attach any file type you want, pretty much, to a Gmail message. So I don't know that I'm following you on the fact that you're saving a file as a GIF and it's not letting you do it. Now, Google does have the Google Drive, which is, you know, where you can actually upload a file into the cloud, as they call it. And yeah. it's on a server that can be, that you can send a link to that file so someone else can pull it down.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is more considerate. But I'm kind of stuck on the fact that you're saving your images in the GIF format.
I don't save them in GIF, I'm ZIP.
Zip. Oh, yeah. I said GIF.
Okay. I use a zip of, you know, I reduce them to, you know, a lower value so that I can send a bunch of them at one time. And
how
then,
big is the zip file you're trying to attach?
Oh, it's always small enough. It's always within the limit, and I've always been able to do it. I mean, I could put about 10 to 15 photos in a one zip file with less than five megabytes that they require.
Okay.
You know, but they won't let me do that anymore. They would only let me send one picture at a time. Otherwise, I have to send it to their drive.
So what happens when you try to send a zip file?
They say we no longer recognize this type of transaction. Your only recourse is to use drive.
Right. I'm going to take...
Yeah, I've got one here. I'm going to do it. Let's see what
I'm going to take six image files, and I'm going to compress them
into
a single file, and I've got that now, and I'm going to take that, and I'm going to go to Gmail, and I'm going to mail that to myself and see if they...
Did it just fine for me.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, oh, my God. You know, I suspected something was wrong with that.
My guess is I'm wondering if you are saving it actually as a zip, or if you're including an executable in that zip file.
No, man. I've been doing this for years. I've been doing this since I've been zipping stuff since PK zip.
Right. Are you using? Have you tried this on a different browser other than the one that's not letting you?
No.
Dwight was going with that is if you haven't tried using a different browser to access your Gmail and send this file, that might be a worthy experiment.
Okay.
So if you're using Internet Explorer, say, right now.
No, I never use Internet Explorer.
You're using Chrome or Firefox.
Firefox and Chrome.
So on a little bit of a test, why don't you fire up Internet Explorer, log into your Gmail, and see if you can send the zip file using the web interface, just to see. You don't have to keep doing it, but it would tell us something. I mean, it would tell you something, because we're not going to wait for you to try that. But it might be something that's related to your browser and the way the browser is interfacing with Gmail that's causing this issue.
Yeah, it's amazing that both of you guys just did it using Gmail, and it didn't happen with you, so I'm...
I know, because I zip up image files. Sometimes I have to send them to my editor to review for a potential article. So I'll zip up 10 image files, usually in about 5 megs in size, 5 to 10 megs in size total for the zip file. Goes through no problem.
Yeah, basically, looking on Google's site, it says that the two ways that a zip file wouldn't go through is if you had a zip file inside another zip file, or if the maximum file size was over 25 megabytes. That's the only circumstance they're showing that would be a reason they wouldn't do it. And if they were blocking it, if they were wanting to force you to do something different, it'd say it on their support pages. Right. They'd keep that current.
Okay. I know that it's the 25 megabytes, and I always keep it below that. I mean, I figured out before I could put it in the zip file. Okay. The other thing is this iPhone. I think I spoke to you. I know I spoke to you guys about this before. The other day, about 5:45 in the morning, a friend of mine called me. I was asleep. He asked me what was wrong. This iPhone had called him while I was asleep. And this has been happening intermittently. I call AT&T, and they connect me with Apple, who told me that they sent me some stuff down, some instructions to do. But this involves going to cloud again. They want me to put all of my stuff in cloud. I have an upgrade, and they won't let me upgrade it unless I go to cloud.
Well, what they're talking about with the cloud is they want you to back up your phone and store the stuff that you may not want to lose on the phone in the cloud. You could do that. You could back it up to iTunes as well. You don't have to use the cloud at all. They're not telling you. I mean, if they're telling you you have to use it, then you're not talking to the right people. You don't have to use the cloud.
Okay.
If your phone is malfunctioning and dialing people on its own, which I don't know how that could happen, but what's happening is you've presented Apple with a problem that they can't really sort out. They don't have an explanation for it. So what they want you to do, probably, if I had to guess, is they want you to reset your phone. They want you to make sure that you have the latest version of the operating system on it. They want to make sure that you've reset it to reset all the settings back to factory default. And if they're suggesting anything about the cloud, they're probably suggesting that this is a means for you to make a backup before you do this so you don't lose any of the files that you have on the phone.
Does when your friend receives these phone calls and he answers them, what does he hear on
the other end?
He doesn't hear anything.
It's blank?
It's blank, yeah. As a matter of fact, this has been going on for about 6 months.
And when you look in your recents on the iPhone, on the phone app, there's a thing called recents. Do you see those calls?
Nothing.
You don't see them?
No, I don't see
them. It's probably not coming from your phone.
Is it possible that somebody else is calling him?
I don't know, but whatever they get my number and call me back.
It's possible to spoof somebody else's phone number.
You think somebody's spoofing his number and calling his friend with it?
Wait, yeah. Now let me tell you what. Let me tell you.
Because if he's
what.
Not seeing it in the recents, the call's not being made.
I talked to people at AT&T and Apple. It's not common, but it's happened before. They've had this complaint before.
Okay.
I can finish talking to you guys right now and turn off my telephone. And within 5 to 10 minutes, about 3 people will call me back wanting to know what I want.
Well, I mean. What is your aversion to using the cloud for something?
I just don't, you know, the way they explain what the cloud is, all your friends can access all your information in this Facebook. You don't have a Facebook.
That's not true. For the cloud and iTunes and to use your phone and store in the cloud, all that stuff is private to you. Now you can share your photo stream. Like if you upload the photos that you take on your phone to the cloud, to iCloud, you can share those photos with people that you care to, but you don't have to. It's not like I can come along and say, I'm going to take a look at Matthew's files that he has stored in the cloud. Let me see what he's got in there. I couldn't do that. Nobody could do that. I mean, a hacker maybe could do that. Maybe somebody at DEF CON, but it's safe. It's not going to be something that's, it's not like uploading all of your images to Facebook or to MySpace or something like that.
Yeah, they were just selling you a feature. They were talking about a feature of the cloud that you might want to use, I think, to give you a reason why you might want it.
You're led with, I take pictures and I send them to people.
Yeah.
Uploading your pictures to a photo hosting site or to a sharing site is a good way to do that. For example, Google has they have the Google Web Albums, so where you can actually upload your photos to your Google Plus account, and then you can organize those into albums. You can set privacy and security on that, and you can share that link with people you care to, so they can look at the photos. Nobody else can see them. Nobody else even knows they're there, but. Instead of you dumping a 10 meg picture file or picture zip into my email, I would prefer it if you uploaded those photos and sent me a link so I could go look at them.
Okay.
I've been looking in the Apple support forums, and indeed there are instances of the iPhone randomly calling people, and it doesn't show up in your recents.
Wow.
So you are experiencing
something. Let me tell you something. Oh, man. I remember you guys, the last time I was listening to you guys, you were talking about some old stuff that was really mind-boggling. I always thought you guys were kids, man, to remember all of that stuff, you know. And I called and I asked one of you guys, how old are you guys? And one of you guys in your 60s, and I couldn't even believe that, you know. But let me tell you what. I'm 75.
Wow.
You know, I love technology, but there's some things that I'm really, very skeptical about, you know. I've seen so many things happen, especially what's happening with my telephone randomly and calling people. So, you know, some things that I don't understand, I'm not going to fool with it, you know.
Right. Well,
and I'm glad we had this conversation because I might give it a try now. But
well,
you know.
I would definitely follow Apple. I mean, if the phone is under any kind of warranty and it's having some kind of problem like this, I would follow along and see about getting that thing fixed.
Oh, let me tell you about the warranty. When I call when AT&T hooked me up with Apple, they asked me, you know, the serial number on, and they looked at it and saw that the phone is not under warranty anymore. And he told me that anything they did was going to cost me $200. So I said, okay, I'll tell you what then. The service period is up on this telephone, and I've been looking at that Android interview. I think I'm going to give it a whirl, you know. And he said, just a minute, let me go and talk to my supervisor. And he came back, Mr. Lewis, we'll be glad to take care of that for you today.
how old is this phone?
It's only a couple of years old.
Is it an iPhone 4?
Over 2 years old. I had the original iPhone and somebody stole it, and I went a couple of months for Cadone and BlackBerry and I couldn't stand it anymore. So I got an extra line just so I could get the iPhone.
Which model of the iPhone?
I got the iPhone, the 4S.
The 4S, okay.
Yeah.
I see a lot of it happening with the 3G and the 3GS and some with the 4. But mm-hmm. what you might do is spend some time looking around in the Apple support forums. I didn't see a solution. Mm-hmm. But check that out.
Yeah. I'm glad to see that I'm not the only one having this problem. Yeah.
I'd never heard of it before, but it looks like it happens.
Yeah.
Found something.
But thank
now.
You guys very much, man.
All right, thank
All
you.
Right, thank you.
All right. Yeah. Bye.
There's also, in searching this, there is an app called a blind call random call that will just call somebody at random from your contact list so you can talk to them. You never know who will answer.
Wow.
Maybe he's got that on his phone.
That sounds a whole lot like what was the chat roulette?
Yeah, right, exactly.
So hopefully they won't come up with a FaceTime roulette.
All right, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT if you want to be on the air with us. Tonight we've got plenty of open lines.
Plenty of time left.
Plenty of time left. Things are settling down a little bit. So give us a ring. Be happy to talk to you about ghost butt dialing. Riders in my pants. 713-526-5738.
Into this jeans we're born.
Riders on the storm.
It's a horror movie called The Dialing.
All right, so before we take this call, you know, I've been talking on my Facebook and Twitter and sometimes on the air about the nerdening of Cynthia. And one of the movie recommendations that I was recommended to show her, and it was a movie I haven't even seen myself. It Came from Outer Space, 1950-something sci-fi classic. One of the first sci-fi movies shot in 3D. But it uses anaglyph, A-N-A-G-L-Y-P-H, red-blue glasses. And so when I got to researching the movie, I thought, I didn't really need to see this in 3D. I mean, everyone was saying, you know, it's a great movie, but I saw it in 2D, and it's just, it loses something in 2D. It's like, it was meant to be seen in 3D. So I found this guy who actually, there's a website that sells vintage and classic horror and sci-fi and stuff. So they had the movie in 3D, and it comes with one pair of the glasses. And I guess you could order more, but I didn't want a pair of paper red and blue glasses. So I looked online, and sure enough, you could buy those. You could buy plastic red, blue 3D glasses, and they're cheap, like a couple of bucks a pair. And I bought some that are clip-on for my glasses. So they actually That's clip great. On like shades and like uh-huh. these big bug eyes. So, but here's something interesting. I recommend getting a pair of anaglyph red, blue 3D glasses and surfing the web with them. If you do a Google image search on anaglyph, you'll get tons of the red, blue shift 3D images. And you go browsing through this, your monitor suddenly just, it becomes, you have a 3D experience on your computer.
And how do you spell Anaglyph?
A-N-A-G-L-Y-P-H. Okay. Yeah, it's it.
Yeah, I have some of those glasses at home.
Just do a Google search on a Google image search on. If you get this really great Google image search result, and it's all just some of it's cool, some of it's bizarre, some of it's not very good, but but yeah, if you got a pair of those glasses, and if you don't have a pair of those glasses, go buy some because it's just a whole different internet experience. Yeah.
I've got a friend who posts 3D images quite often. And it's just like, I don't have any glasses. This is useless, you know? It bugs me, but I got to get a hold of a pair of those.
Go hold a pair, because if you look at the pictures, if you do a search for an image search, you'll see the red, green shift. Like, that's not very interesting to look at. But all of a sudden, all those Google images that come back in the search just get depth and go 3D. So now I'm waiting on the delivery of the movie, and when I get back from DEF CON, that's going to be the next movie we watch, as It Came from Outer Space in 3D.
Awesome.
713-526-5738 in 3D.
Lots of theremins in that movie, probably.
See that video I posted of 176 theremins all simultaneously playing Beethoven?
Wow. I saw the link. I didn't click
it. It was great. It was mind-boggling. And the theremins were built into these Russian nesting dolls. So you have these austere Asian women dressed in black dresses holding a Russian nesting doll in their other hand going, you know, doing the theremin stuff. It's very weird. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Peter.
Peter. Hey, Peter.
Hey.
You're on
the
air. Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. What can we do for you?
Okay, I'm trying to turn my radio down, but I'm in my car phone, so I'm not sure how I do all that. Hopefully you won't get any feedback.
All right, well, you just turn your car radio down, and you just listen to us on the phone.
So my question is, I'm kind of an old dinosaur IBM guy trying to go to the new cool Apple world, and I'm not finding it as cool and as user-friendly as it's supposed to be. And I've got two questions. One, I'm sure Mr. Hughes can answer in a nanosecond. Where is the delete key on an Apple keyboard?
It's the
key marked delete.
Yeah, it says delete on it, unless you've got a very old keyboard.
Have you got one of the old clicky keyboards from the G5 or something?
No, I don't want a backspace. I want a delete.
The delete key says delete.
You mean like the PC type delete where it doesn't
stand still and it swallows the characters? Function delete.
That's what I want. Follows the character.
Okay, so you want the delete key to actually delete, not backspace over.
Correct.
Right. You want a Windows delete, which would be function delete.
Function delete, right.
Function delete,
which is FN. FN delete.
Okay.
It's the FN delete key.
It's the FN delete key, exactly.
Yeah, okay, that's excellent. And then the other one is just a philosophical question, and I'll get off the phone and maybe somebody can address it. Why do I have to go through iTunes to download photographs from my Mac Mini desktop computer to my Apple iPad?
You don't necessarily. You can upload them to the cloud. You can enable iCloud on the Mac. And you can have your photos available everywhere, and that would include your, I guess.
Actually, no. The photos don't.
No, that's right. I'm thinking of the other way around.
It's actually issues iPhoto. You usually put it in iPhoto, and then you enable PhotoStream in iPhoto, and then you use it. You view them in PhotoStream on the iPad.
Does it connect to the computer to see them? Because I remember, like, with the before there was the iPhone, the iVideo, there was the iPhoto,
mm-hmm.
iPod Photo, the photo iPod
Photo.
It was, and yeah, in order to get images onto the iPod, you had to sync that up through iTunes.
Right.
And there is a way, and obviously there's still a way to do
yes,
that.
Yes, there is. But that's yeah, not, yes. but that's not
sure,
the, that's not the simplest
sure,
way.
If you've got an internet connection, you can do all that. But whatever happens in the days of there just being another drive that's computer one computer drive to another where you just kind of drag a file from from
the
your...
iPad has never been like that. You can't access the file system on the iPad.
No, you've never been able to like drag and drop right onto the iPad and say, here's a folder, I want to stick a bunch of photos into it that I can view on the iPad. Now you, that's just not the way the iPad's designed.
So it's, so you do have to go through some form of internet transformation.
Or you can sync it up with a USB cable to iTunes on the computer and you can move the files over that way.
Right. No, I got that. Okay, I just didn't understand that and it just didn't seem real user-friendly to me.
Okay, well, I understand.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for your call. Bye-bye. All right, yeah, what I do is, yeah, I mean, obviously the... I like to have my stuff online. I can view it from any device. But there was a situation where I wanted to, and I didn't get very far down that path, but I wanted to upload a bunch of photos from my computer directly to the iPad just to have it because I was going to go into a situation where there was no internet connection. I want to be able to view those photos. And the only way I found to do it easily was through iTunes. And even then, that wasn't that easy. I remember when I'm surprised that I've gone all in with Mac. You know, like I have, because my I remember, you know, we're getting ready to go on this vacation to Ireland. We're going to go driving around Ireland. And in 2005, we did this in the UK, went driving around the UK. And I needed something to store photos off my camera. I needed to be able to have someplace to, and you know, carrying a laptop wasn't really an option. I didn't have a laptop and I didn't have an external hard drive, but I went out and I thought the iPod photo, that is a cool thing. And I'd read online that you could actually interface it with the camera and download the images from the camera onto the thing, but it was only, what, 500 meg? It was not a lot of storage. I could store basically what was on a memory card, on a very small memory card onto that. But that's what, and I bought that thing, and it was expensive as it could be, like I think like $600 for the darn thing. And within 3 months of having it, the iPod video came out with so much more storage and did even more. And it's like that was like a big Apple burn at that time. But now I guess I've forgiven them. All right, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. What's that?
Barrett posted a new picture from DEF CON on Facebook. It's kind of funny.
Is it the 21?
It's the close-up of the... I think it might be the press badge, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Let me see. That's the... actually looks like the goon badge because it's red.
Okay.
But the press badge is green.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't know what that is. I mean, that's, but there's puzzles. Apparently, he's found. I don't know if he did a scratch away on the goon badge or what he's done here. But there's a at DEF CON. There's always a huge like layer upon layer puzzles. And yeah, I see you, Groovehouse.
Yeah.
But there's layers.
Upon, you didn't know what it was.
And I've got one. So the badges contain codes and parts of clues that helped decipher all the different puzzles, and apparently Barrett is hacking the card, as it were, and revealing more and more stuff that he's finding just in the first day of DEF CON. The 21 theme that they decided, it looks like, you know, last year it was a Mayan apocalypse thing, and cool. So now that we survived that, this year is the 21st annual DEF CON, and they're going with what looks to be a blackjack theme.
Oh, right. There you go. That's where that came from.
Yeah.
Cool.
So this DEF CON 21, and the badges look like playing cards. Yeah. They're plastic, but they have playing cards. Press badges are deuces. So it's the lowest, the lowest number you can get.
Deuce bag.
Oh, thank God. Speaking of deuces, somebody calling in with a Galaxy S deuce.
Yeah.
All right. So, who's yes. up?
Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Tom.
Tom, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah. How's it going, guys? I called last week when somebody had a problem with their Galaxy 4G. Well, I asked, my Galaxy S2 is now deciding to act the same way the 4G did. It drops phone calls. It automatically exits programs that I'm running. It will not charge properly. And when I do plug it in, like say if I want to turn it off and plug it in just to charge it, it will not charge. It'll turn the phone back on and then charge it. And well, actually, it won't charge at all, and I got to fiddle with the button. Second of all, okay, anyhow,
That one's first. Go ahead.
How old is the phone?
4 months.
4 months? Should still be under warranty. Have you called your provider?
Oh, I know. I'm going to go back in and give them holy get up.
You may want to check the thing that Jay and I both experienced in a short period of time is take, like, a wooden toothpick and make sure that the charging port is clean.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes if you keep it in your pocket and that port is uncovered, it'll get pocket lint and junk in there, and that will block the charge.
The phone that I have, I bought a cover for it that actually plugs that port up.
Okay.
So it's clean. But if the problem is, it's starting to get, when I, like, say I play Angry Birds or whatever, any program that I play, it starts to get really hot in the back again. And that's what my old one did when it burned up 3 times.
Well, I think that if you're having a hardware issue with this phone, that you're going to have to address it through warranty. There's not a fix for it that says, you know.
Okay.
I really recommend that you explore, explore this with your provider and make. They're probably looking at replacing the device if it's physically, you know, crapping out like that.
Okay, no problem. Second of all, if I can ask another question.
Sure.
I got a HP laptop. It's a professional. And the other day, I got an AVG on it, and it's been running fine. And for some reason, it blanked out saying you're no longer protected. AVG and Windows Defender is turned off, and it popped up says, and I looked at it and says, why would it be turned off? I close the program, bring it back up. It says to restart, to be totally protected, restart the computer. Problem is, when I brought the program back up, everything was on.
Yes.
Now I have a problem with my links. I can now no longer get links to work from email and to open up in the browser.
All right, that could be something completely different. If the antivirus decided to get knocked out and come back on, then that could be a sign of a virus that got through.
Right.
That disabled it.
Is this Windows, Microsoft
Windows
Security
7.
Essentials? When Microsoft Security Essentials is updated, or sometimes when it installs new.
He said AVG.
It was AVG?
AVG.
Yeah.
He's talking AVG. Right.
Was it, what can happen with any of these is when they update, they take themselves off and bring themselves back online. They shut themselves
down. This wasn't, everything was up to date. I updated about once a week.
Right.
And it was already up to date. Plus, I have automatic update on anyway.
Now, have you got the AVG antivirus, or have you got the AVG security suite?
I got the antivirus.
All right, so
it has been blocking rootkits like crazy. They're trying to get into my computer.
AVG is a great antivirus program, but if you are getting besieged with malware, it sounds like something's gotten past AVG.
If AVG doesn't catch it, I run Malwarebytes at least once a month, and I run Spybot.
Okay.
I got 2 or 3 different items
since
that
this
I run has
happened,
in case one doesn't catch it.
Since this has happened to you, have you run those other tools?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But I'm trying to get back into safe mode so I can run them without everything being lined up.
Well, you don't have to be in safe mode to run them. You can at least run them to see what's going to happen. Then, telling me you can't get into safe mode?
Right. I've been trying to get into safe mode now for 2 days. So I said, "The hell with it."
Are you not getting into safe mode because you forgot how, or the computer's not?
No. It says it press escape into the start options, and safe mode never comes up. Tools and restored it back.
No. You're not listening. Safe mode. To get into safe mode, the best way to get into safe mode is when the computer's starting up is to press the F8 key, and then that'll bring you to a startup menu that will let you choose to go into safe mode. But if you want to send me an email on this, I'd be happy to answer your call offline. Unfortunately, that was just too frustrating of a phone call to continue. So. 713-526-5738. Now, it is true to say that if your antivirus gets deactivated, there are viruses that will just cause them to shut off, and it's possible you got it restarted. Not opening links and emails, it could, that could be a sign of a virus. sometimes there's a file association that actually occurs with HTML links that allows Outlook allows your email to pass that URL to your web browser. The one thing, if it's not a virus and you just lost your ability to click links and emails and have them open up, is to reset Internet Explorer back to default settings. And if you go online and search for how to reset Internet Explorer back to default settings, you'll find instructions on how to do that. And I find that clears things up pretty good and clears that kind of thing up. 713-526-573. We've got about 7 minutes left in the show. Actually, 3 minutes left in the show, minus an outro. So we're actually basically out of time.
Exactly.
Which is fine by me, because I'm tired. Groovehouse
is just totally checked out.
You know, in my efforts to get ready to go to DEF CON, I was consolidating stuff, so I thought, you know, the cable I need, I have my charging cables kind of parsed out in different locations. I have one connected to my computer at work, I have one in my car, and I have one at the house. And I thought, for tonight, I'm going to grab the cable that I'm probably not going to need. And I should have grabbed the one from work, but I grabbed the one out of the car and I rolled it up and I took it inside and I stuck it with my stuff. So I remembered, so I'd at least be sure I had a charging cable for my iPhone when I was in Vegas. But my phone battery, because I've been using the hotspot, I've drained down to 5%. So my phone, and I don't have a charger in my car to charge it back up on the way home. So
you can charge overnight.
Well, I can charge it overnight. That's not a problem, but I'm about to lose the ability to make phone calls or Foursquare updates.
So turn it off until you have to make that Foursquare update.
Oh, that's a good
idea. At least save that little 5% in case you have you need it on the road.
So then when
you still use Foursquare?
So then when you get a flat tire and you're standing on the side of the road in the rain and you turn your phone on, you'll see it go from 1% to 0% and blank out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, yes, I still use Foursquare. Do you still use Foursquare?
I use it primarily to log when I go to the gym, so I use it to keep track of when I've gone to the gym because it's got.
Because you don't know from the effort that you put forth.
No, because did I go three times that week or five times that week?
Can't remember, huh?
I go a lot.
I use it. I have fun with it. I don't care that much about it. It's not a huge deal to me, but I have it on my phone. It's readily available, so I'll check into places. What I like to do is when I travel overseas is if we go to a place enough times where I can score a mayorship while I'm overseas. And so I get to be mayor of Botticello's or whatever. And then it's funny to see how long it takes for somebody to oust me as mayor.
For the longest time, and this is because when we were picking Jessie up from when she's coming back and forth from school in Missouri, at Hobby, there's like a dirt cell phone lot at Hobby, and while I was sitting there waiting for her, I'd check into the cell phone lot, and I would, for years, I was the mayor of that cell phone lot.
Own that cell
dirt
phone
lot, no
so on
less.
The check-in for the gym, are you trying to do that so you don't go too much, or so that you go more?
No, just so that I want to be able to say, you know, no, last week, I only went twice. I didn't go three times. You know?
So I should have hit it up. Yeah.
Okay, well, so that wrecks my plan of getting a hacker to, like, reset your thing so it always looks like you need to go again. So you just keep going back and going back.
I also check in on Foursquare. I mean, Facebook's have a backup.
We also check into KPFT, I noticed.
The battle for the mayor of KPFT starts here.
And you don't work out here much at all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do.
All right, well, we're going to get out of here. We're out of time. We're out of touch. We're out of time.
Out of patience.
Out of everything. We're out of steam.
Steam.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in to Technology Bites. We're glad you joined us this week. We'll be back next Wednesday night for more of this. Full staff, I'm hoping. We'll have, unless we just, you know, all end up in a Las Vegas jail. Mm. Or married to each other. Or
something. Whoa. Who's the girl now?
It remains to be seen.
That's right.
I say I'm secure. I don't have a problem, Miss Groovehouse. Sister sensitive. All right. So stick around for the next show. If you're listening locally, that's
Michio Kaku.
Explorations of Michio Kaku. Check your local listings if you're listening outside the Houston area.
Machu Picchu.
I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Dwight.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Lady of Desire.
know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You can feed your family in KPFT, too. KPFT partners with local grocery stores in neighborhoods near you. When you purchase your groceries using KPFT cards, you make a donation to the station. While those nutritious foods help build strong bodies, you can also nourish KPFT with thought-provoking programming. For more information, visit kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 314. Now your food dollars can become pennies for our thoughts at KPFT. Thank you from KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.